I'm Jane Johnson. I started the Careering into Motherhood community for women who want a career as well as a family. I'd seen too many women leave careers and jobs that they loved because it didn't seem possible to fit it all in around childcare. I want motherhood and ambition to happily coexist. On our Facebook group, Careering into Motherhood, we've got 6,500 women now, and it's all about support, advice, and jobs. Our masterclasses and online workshops give mums the skills to build and remain in fulfilling careers. For more details on all of our upcoming programmes, including career coaching and CV writing, using LinkedIn with purpose, email me, jane@careeringintomotherhood.com. I'm absolutely delighted to have Leonie Hunt on the podcast today. She made a really big career shift when she moved from being an attorney in the US. She was a healthcare lawyer, had a great big job, a young child, was pregnant with her second, when she got a phone call from her husband to say that he may be up for a job over here in London. She moved over here, and today she is one of the senior management team of DigMe Fitness, which is one of the spinning gyms in and around London. Obviously, they've had to massively shift what they do. They haven't been open for the last 3 or 4 months, and they can't have people coming into the studios. So she is an incredibly gritty woman. She has lots of interesting stories, and I talked to her about what it takes to make that kind of shift and how she did it, and also how she feels about that, having invested in a really big career and now having almost walked away from that. My guest is Leonie Hunt. So thank you very much for agreeing to come on the show. I think probably one of the first times I saw you, you were through the screen, literally since lockdown started. I joined DigMe and became, I love spinning. I've been fairly addicted for about 10 years. So when lockdown happened, I remember emailing my gym and saying, can I get a bike? And they just didn't respond. And I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do for my mental health and everything? And then through a friend of a friend, they told me about DigMe, and I managed to get one of your very like gold
You're
dust
very lucky
yeah I know and so I think one of the first times I saw you, you were dressed in a cape as a superhero and shouting at everyone, but your music was amazing. I was like, oh my God, it didn't even feel like 45 minutes. It was not even that painful. And then I think through Instagram I just was messaging you and so on, and it turns out that you had a complete career change, didn't you? So could you just talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Where to start? So I guess we'll start from that day. That particular moment, that ride was my 41st birthday. So I thought I would pizzazz it up with a little bit of fancy dress and have a bit of fun with it on that day. I am by training and prior profession, actually an American educated attorney, bar licensed, practiced for 10 years. I sort of knew from an early age, from university age, kind of where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do. So I followed a relatively typical path through uni, then law school, and also grad school at the same time, because I knew I wanted in that particular moment in time and place and space to be a healthcare attorney in the US. So my training, I have a master's degree in public health, and I have a law degree with a focus on what we term globally as health law. And I graduated from law school in 2005. Coincidentally, that's right around the same time I fell in love with spinning. So unpacking my current role is really, can be summed up as saying I finally had a moment and opportunity to indulge one of my true passions in life, which is cycling. But back then I used indoor cycling as mental health and release during my law school journey and subsequently through my first 10 years of practice. It's kind of where I went for my own personal catharsis, to get sweaty, to get healthy, to have fun, to make friends, things of that nature. But yeah, so I graduated in 2005, began practicing, worked my way from sort of a generalist practice to a fairly specialized compliance practice in healthcare law. And along the way, as the story goes for many of us, I met someone, got engaged and got married, relocated from where I was living in America to the East Coast where he was. And we started a family. We had our first son whilst still in the US, the New Jersey, New York City area. fast forward to 2014, and he was presented with an opportunity to move to London.
Had that always been a potential, or was it?
That had never been a potential. If I'm completely honest with you, Jane, he called me one, and many women probably be able to relate to this. He rang me one day. I was at work, fully stacked up. At that time, Ethan was 11 months old, and I was back at work. I was fortunate. So I had 5 months of maternity leave. No, it doesn't feel like a lot here, but I felt very blessed at the time to be able to have 3 months off paid and then to be in a position to take 2 months unpaid, at which point I returned to work full time and I got a nanny. Basically, I worked to pay the nanny at that point. But for myself, I mean, I was committed to my career and I did want to go back to work, even though I wasn't ready to leave him. It's a constant tension. I knew the time had come. I kind of had to return to the responsibilities of the practice. But I found someone that I loved and adored who loved and adored Ethan. And so it made it a little bit easier. But sort of as a tangent, subsequent to that, I did end up reducing my hours and reducing my salary in my practice. It became too much to do full-time billable hours for myself with my husband's career and be the mother that I wanted to be. And I was in a position 9 years in to be with people who were willing to accommodate and to be flexible. We're talking about 2013 at this point. So I think part-time and flexi work and family balance was part of the discussion back then in corporate America. I think it's become more of a discussion point and more commonly requested. But at that time, those partners were willing to work with me, quite a family supportive firm. So I took a 50% hour cut, 50% pay cut, and sort of worked from home, worked from the office a couple of days a week. So that's where I was at the time. Somewhere in there, my husband calls and says, I've been contacted with an opportunity in London. Should I pursue it? To which I'm probably holding a baby, tapping on the BlackBerry, completely overwhelmed. And I was like, if the job sounds appealing, I'm not going to hold you back, right? Like, if you just make these comments, you think, I don't know. I don't know anything about it. What are the chances of all the applicants in all the world that you, my lovely, talented husband, will get the offer? So fast forward 8 months. He was the only man left standing. And he's like, well, I'm the last man standing. We talked it over. Wasn't an easy decision. It's one of those, I suppose, relationship balancing decisions.
Had you ever lived in the UK or overseas before?
I had not lived overseas. As a child, I mean, I'm Canadian by birth. So I lived my first 11 years in Canada. And then my father got relocated with his company. He worked for a large aluminum manufacturing company out of Canada. So I was used to starting over and moving. And I had moved from one part of North America to the other as an early teenager. I had hoped that I'd pick a place, buy a home. We had bought a forever home in New Jersey in 2012. And I thought, this is it. This is the place. but, you know, life is very unpredictable, and I'm a firm believer that you make the best decisions you can in whatever moment you're in with the information that you have. So you sort of move through life, evaluating what you know and making the decision you think is the right decision for you or your family. And so my husband and I discussed it. I wasn't super keen to quit my practice and quit my job and move, but I wasn't deeply opposed to it either because I knew how much this opportunity meant to him. And London's a great city. I wasn't opposed to living abroad. So we made a family decision to move.
And did you think that you would, you know, once you were settled, you would find, as a US attorney, are you able to practice here or do you need to convert?
So as a US attorney, there are a couple different ways. I think there would have been more opportunity to re-enter the practice with an international firm without doing a conversion, going through the QL, Qualified Lawyer Transfer Scheme, I believe is what it's called, at least what it was called 6 years ago. If you did something in an international market practice area, mergers and acquisitions, capital markets, debt restructuring, whatever the case may be, something more in the business and financial services sector of the practice of law, you probably could go to a Skadden Arps in their London office and have more opportunities. Regrettably or not, by the time we made the decision to move here, my skills and expertise were deeply entrenched in national and state level healthcare regulatory matters, Medicare, Medicaid, antitrust, Stark Law, things that were unique to that particular country, those states, those hospitals, and healthcare providers. And so the substantive skill set didn't transfer so easily. Coincidentally, we found out we were expecting our second child the same year we decided to move. So when I landed in London, I was roughly 22 weeks pregnant with my second son, which was not intended at that moment, but intended in our family planning. I might not have picked precisely that year if I had it to do over, but it all worked out. So when we landed, I didn't really have any forward-looking thoughts about my own career. I spent the time focusing on my eldest son, settling the family, finishing my pregnancy, finding, you know, an OBGYN, figuring out where I was going to deliver, and really just taking time out. I had been presented with an opportunity to take time out and focus on the family and let my husband get settled in his role. And it was amazing. Like that first year, I didn't miss working. I would just go to Hyde Kensington Gardens with Ethan, and I was no longer beholden to the BlackBerry or partner deadlines or the amending the contracts for the physicians. And I would just, you know, for the first time in a long time, I had no agenda. And so he wanted to chase tractors all day. So yeah, we just chased tractors all day. It was just me and him until his little brother arrived. But for those, you know, 4 or so months, we just kind of bopped around, and I was a bit of a tourist in London, and it was amazing. And so it was quite full on with family and having my second son and getting settled. And the first 2 years, I was like, it's no fuss, no muss, no thought about returning to the workforce. I did start to look in year two. I started to consider returning to the practice of law, look at the qualified lawyer transfer scheme. It's a significant investment of money and time and effort, and basically retrains you as a solicitor. For myself at that time, wasn't sure how many years we would be in country. It wasn't a time limited role that my husband was in. We'd sort of said 5 years, hard stop. We've now passed that. We, you know, things change. But when you're in the moment, then you think, well, in 5 years, I'm sure I'll be ready to go home. So is it worth it, all that effort, for something with 2 years left on the shelf life? I looked at it and then I set it aside. I wasn't really, I'm being honest, Jane, I wasn't really interested in taking a third bar exam. I was already licensed in 2 different states in the U.S. and it was I was a bit tired of starting over. And I just didn't want, I was a bit long in the tooth for myself as a healthcare attorney to start over in a new area of law and to work 60 hours a week. Like I just, at that point in my life, I had mixed emotions about going back to that tempo of work.
Mm. But it must be hard because you had invested so much in your career previously to having children to even go through. It's pretty hard graft in the US to become an attorney. And then you obviously did your MA to specialize in public health and so on. So I'm absolutely no judgment. I'm quite interested as someone who didn't stick it out that long educationally and didn't qualify in a vocational degree. I'm always interested how, I don't know if reconcile is the right word, but how you come to a decision where you say, okay, I'm going to put that one's to bed. That one's passed. It's had its time for me now. And I'm going to do something different.
That's a really good question. For what it's worth, I'm still paying for my law school loans. Add a bit of irony to the situation. I don't know if I've said to myself, well, Laura, you'll never do it again. Because I try really hard never to say never. So I'm saying for right now, you're not going to do it again. And people will routinely ask me if I would go back to the practice of law if we did move back to the States. And I think I would certainly investigate that more fully because those licenses, for what it's worth, are in escrow. Like the only thing that I'd have to overcome is time out of practice and sort of refreshing my mind. But my permissions to practice are still in good standing. I don't know. I did try to go back sort of kind of, maybe my heart wasn't fully in it. You know, I shopped my resume to local firms. I tried to explain that I had a deeper skill set that wasn't so entrenched in substantive knowledge, and I could relearn if they would just point me to the proverbial library and so on and so forth. And it wasn't so well received. And it was starting at that point where I was in my life in 2016, was really starting to cause my self-confidence to take some serious hits, you know, because you think to yourself, well, gosh, I've been really successful elsewhere. And I can't even get a look from you, whether it's because I'm American or it's just too much work, or you think I'm going to go home, or I didn't write my CV the right way. I don't really know, but there's something I keep bumping up against, or multiple things. If you would just give me a shot and sit down with me, and they just didn't. So I put an end to that, and we moved from W-2 to Richmond. So I spent 2 years in W-2. I wasn't working, I was flirting with the idea. Then I put it back on ice, and we moved to Richmond. And that's where sort of DigMe sort of entered my life. But I suppose I'm a bit like, I try not to dwell too much on, I never stopped being a lawyer. I have all of that knowledge, I have all of those interests, but I think I have evolved for myself from a place where being a lawyer was my soul. Like being trained like that as a woman, you know, coming in the early 2000s, defined my self-confidence and defined a lot of my person in my own mind, whether or not that was externally true or not. I sort of carried it like a mantle, with a mantle of pride. And I think what has happened is I've learned to put it in a better place in the broader spectrum of the things that bring me joy and confidence and happiness in my life. And I don't need it as deeply as I did. So that, and I never say never. So could I wake up in 2 years and decide I want to do my qualified lawyer transfer scheme and start all over? Potentially. At the moment, I'm really content, more than content. Sort of the DigMe journey has reaffirmed that you can do new things. And if you trust yourself, you can forge ahead in new careers. So
exactly. And I think that's the bit I'd love to talk about as well. You know, how you found fitness. You obviously mentioned that you have been into spinning and indoor cycling and so on for a long time. But how do you bite that bullet? Because again, there's quite. I work with a lot of women who have had large corporate careers, like you've discussed, and then actually going in a completely different direction. And let's face it, fitness is. That does require a certain guts and determination, and you know, you are really stepping off into the unknown. So how did you get to that point, and how has that journey been sort of almost your second career? What is your second career?
It is my second career now, but I didn't know at the time that I started to lay the groundwork that I would end up at present. Well, I mean, I sort of sit back and I think, wow, you know, I didn't know. All I did know is I was taking a passion, pursuing a dream I had in one small area that then turned into something else, that then became something even bigger, that became what is now a deeply entrenched, legitimate second career for me. So I have always cycled. I started indoor spinning in 2004 with the Johnny G bike, still relatively new, the concept of spinning, stayed with it, started cycling outdoors and indoors, stayed with it. I've probably ridden with every large name brand you could think of in the New York City or London area, from SoulCycle on down, Flywheel, et cetera, et cetera. As I said, it was my release, so I did it for fun. But then you get on about 15 odd years, and in that space, kind of a couple years in London, I was like, I would really love to teach indoor cycling. And we had just moved to Richmond, and I was riding in DigMe. DigMe had just opened its first doors in the summer of 2016. Let me get my numbers right. Yes, 2016. Yeah, that's right. Because we turned 3 last summer. I think it's 4 this year. Yeah. Anyway, 2016, Richmond doors open. I start riding. A lot of the initial classes were taught by the still today head of fitness, Dan Little. He and I became kind of good acquaintances. And I'd say, Dan, you know, I'd really love to teach. What do I need to do to begin to teach indoor cycling? And he said, you need to go away and get this particular certificate, exercise to music level 2. That's the minimum. So go back 2016, 2017. I spent that year with young kids and getting my exercise to music level 2. That was it. But I was sort of laying the groundwork. And then it took another year to get on to the DigMe Academy, where we train our own instructors. We audition and train our own instructors, and all the while still riding as a member of DigMe. But I had gone and gotten a certification, and then I just sort of had to wait for the moment to come my way to audition and get onto the academy. And so I did that a couple years ago. And I think come this November, it will be 2 years that I'm teaching with DigMe. But that's kind of how I got into indoor cycling instructing. And I always knew that I wanted to teach. It was a dream of mine. I love it. I love the music. I love the people. I love the what we do in that closed arena. Like everything, I'm with you. I'm with them. The passion is genuine. I don't have to fake it. It's not like work. For me, it's not like work when I'm teaching. It's just a sweaty party on a bike with people, you know. That's the dream, isn't it? I mean, and I wish I could say that about practicing law, but I can't. I mean, I loved trial and I loved aspects of the practice of law, but there were definitely parts and parcels of that particular career that I found less enjoyable. But yeah, so I went away and I did the work that Dan Little asked of me and was given the opportunity. And then I started cutting my chops as an instructor with DigMe. I was recruited to come be the general manager of the Richmond studio because I've been with the company either as a member or a member of staff functionally since it opened. So I have longstanding friendships and relationships with people in the company from the owners down.
So, you know, where next? You've obviously, you're involved in the strategic and the management side of things. And actually, before we go on to where next for you, it must have been really interesting to have worked in somewhere like that in the last 3 or 4 months, where very, very quickly, obviously, your studios were closed, your clients couldn't come in and ride bikes. How did you adapt?
It was incredibly interesting and challenging, and we've all learned a tremendous amount. There's no question it was a team effort of ideas and execution. You know, when the doors did close, I don't want to say it was chaos. It did feel a bit chaotic, but, everyone started brainstorming and different members of the team came up with the idea to rent the bikes. And then it fell on the fitness team, myself, the head of fitness, head of our matrix and head of yoga, to figure out how we could operationalize our respective concepts virtually, get the instructors, get them bikes, get them upskilled, figure out Zoom, you know, all in a relatively quick turnaround. And it wasn't without bumps and little hiccups here and there, but it was pretty incredible when you sit back and we're all better for it. And the members were incredibly thankful. But to sort of round out like how, so now I'm head of cycle for DigMe Fitness, but really my journey is like a 2.5 year journey in the company. And I never knew when I took the first step that it would lead to this place, but I think it's important to just think about what you want and work towards that and do it the best that you can and not be afraid to put yourself out for new opportunities. So it's part organic, part faith, and part just never being afraid that the answer will be no. Because the worst thing you can do is not ask. Like as a young attorney, I'd ask to argue motions or something. And I had a senior partner once say, listen, don't stop asking. Don't be offended if we say no. But the worst thing we can say is no. You're your own best advocate if you think that you're ready for something.
Yeah. Has being a mother had any influence on your career change? And I don't know, how is your role at DigMe flexible under normal circumstances? Let's not talk about now when everyone is just skin of the teeth type of thing. But normally, are you kind of full-time in a studio or?
Yeah, so I was home for a few years, I think all in 3 years, 4 years really. And I knew I was ready to go back to work because for myself, I'm, as I told you privately, I've always known or felt I was a better mother if I worked. That's me. That's sort of my own self-awareness. Even though I treasured the dedicated time I had at home, was never going to go on in perpetuity. Like I was reaching a point where I needed more to be more rounded. My GM role was very flexible. That was actually a part-time role, which was wonderful at that stage. The head of concept role is a full-time role. It's not utterly inflexible, but it comes and came with a little bit less flexibility than, say, what I had in my predecessor role, where I knew it was kind of part-time and I really had a tremendous amount of flexibility. The company is incredibly family-friendly. I work with people who have families, people who understand the dynamic. Thankfully, it's still a relatively small company, so you get it's easier to get a little bit more accommodation. I, prior to lockdown, was gone a lot. Yeah, it's 40 hours of the admin side, plus teaching 9 to 10 classes a week across the estate. Both of my kids were in school at this point. We did start to make more of the weekends. I did try to structure my days so that I could do drop off 4 days a week and collection 1 day a week. So I would, you know, try to make inroads in my diary, in the sense that the corporate office isn't in the city for DigMe. So it's a bit more, historically, we'd meet up in a Richmond coffee shop. We'd all get together, have our meetings or this or that. So I could carve time out in a workday with a little bit more ease than being tied to. So for example, when I went back to work, I worked in retail in Richmond for a year prior to joining DigMe as staff while training to be an instructor. I wanted to go back to work. So I went out for a retail job. That's incredibly inflexible. Once you're slotted with a shift, that's your shift. So if I worked an 8-hour shift on Saturday, I knew I'd be gone for those 8 hours on a Saturday. I have more flexibility than that in the corporate head office of the company, but I came into it with eyes wide open that it would be taking more time away from the kids. Not saying that comes without guilt or cost, but it's the right move at this time, you know, for me, for them. There's no perfection. You're always robbing from Peter to pay Paul, I feel like, as a working mother.
I hear it gets easier. I'm waiting.
Really? Maybe when they go to uni and then suddenly you're crying into your... crying from empty nester syndrome.
Oh, great. It's really interesting talking to you, and it's been a fascinating... You really have had a fascinating journey. I guess I'd just like to kind of close out with, for some of our listeners who may be, especially in this post-COVID world or getting towards the end of the COVID curve, and they're contemplating doing something completely different and taking a completely different track with their careers, what one piece of advice would you give them?
Yeah, I mean, I think my advice would be to do it. If they feel they can do it, don't be afraid of the unknown, but obviously everyone's circumstances vary. So if it's a change that they feel they've got enough support to make with whatever circumstances they are in with their children or partners or no partners or so on and so forth, try. The worst thing that happens is that it doesn't work. But I'm just a big believer of making the best decision you can in each moment you're in. And yeah, assuming it doesn't put them in a perilous position. I guess I am still a bit risk averse. And so my journey comes with a big caveat that I'm not a single parent, and I was in a position financially to be able to take those risks and take that time. And I feel very blessed for that. So I'm never too far removed from the pragmatism of any given situation, but if it feels just even a little bit right in their gut and they can make it work, I'd say go for it.
Thanks to Leonie for a really honest interview there. She talked openly about how she still feels about having walked away from a career, even though it was the right one for her at the time, and even though she is incredibly happy with her new career as a fitness instructor. It's not every day you meet someone who was formerly an attorney with a big hotshot lawyer job, and now they've moved into a completely different industry. So she is proof that you can do it if it is the right time for you. Please do send your feedback, leave a review in the Apple reviews section. I really love hearing your feedback, and we get loads of it, and it makes it all worthwhile. So please do send that in to me at jane@careeringintomotherhood.com, or as I say, leave it in the podcast review section. Don't forget, we have a whole range of coaching programs and masterclass sessions coming up again in September. They are booking up fast, so if you are interested in learning some new skills, again, get in touch. I'll happily send you the brochure for our CV writing and LinkedIn program that starts in the first week of September, once, fingers crossed, the kids are back at school. Take care, everyone. Thanks for listening.